you.
The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Good evening and welcome to the Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio. I am Aisha and I'm in the studio this evening with my wonderful co-host, as always, Matt Boothman.
Hello.
We have Alex Pankhurst.
Good evening.
And a very exciting new person who has never been on the radio before, let alone on the Blackshaw Arts Hour. It is Nick Tatchell.
Good evening.
Hi, Nick.
You're right.
Nick's here, guys. We've got a lot of people in the studio this evening. And we have a pretty packed show as well. Vicky's going to be doing an arts thing of the week. And we've got episode 5 of Great Expectations coming up as well. But Nick, let's maybe like talk to Nick a little bit about who he is and what he does. So you work at Blackshaw the rest of us in some capacity. Alex is going to be doing a play with us later
Absolutely, in May.
Yes, we're going to be talking about that. So everyone here works in some capacity with Blackshaw. But what is your official title, Nick?
My official title is the Funding and Partnerships Manager.
Okay.
Which I'm the money man.
Sure. That sounds more exciting than your actual official title, being called the money man.
The money man. Yeah. Or the lack of money, probably, sadly.
So yeah. If you're the money man, what do you do?
I try my hardest to get funding in for Blackshaw's projects, various projects.
Okay.
So that's external funding from... Oh, lots of different funders. Arts Council, mainly.
So you write the applications.
I write the applications with the help of Vicky.
Yes,
and
Vicky,
Ellie.
Who we know.
Yeah, Vicky, who you know.
Yeah, so we're talking about getting all the money. Have you been successful yet, Nick? How successful? Like, what's your hit rate like?
Hit rate. we're quite good with Wandsworth Borough Council. They kindly...
Yes, Wandsworth are nice to us.
They're lovely.
Yeah.
They fund us. They like us a lot. And we,
it's
and
nice
we
being
like
liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arts Council's been the difficult one, actually.
Yeah.
It's because everybody's applying to that, aren't
Everyone
they?
Is.
People make too much art. There's just too much art around that needs to be funded.
Probably
you need to stop making quality art.
That's it. Yeah, I think that's what the government have been trying to do, actually.
But, yeah, stifle the creativity.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Politics.
Whoa. This is the Blackshaw Arts Hour, not the Blackshaw Politics Hour.
Is that coming up afterwards?
Yeah. Anyway, so thank you, Nick, for explaining us what you do. So we're going to go into this thing, which is exciting.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
I say it's exciting because we sort of talked this up quite a lot
about a
fortnight ago.
And also, I always enjoy that jingle more when Alex is actually in the room who did the voice for that jingle.
We could have had a weird echo going on with that.
Yeah,
let's try that next time.
Done it in a round. That would be nice.
Yeah, so the review this week is Nina Forever.
Yes.
And we built this up partly because there's a little bit of a Blackshaw connection to this movie. And this is how I became aware of it as a thing, because this is not a movie that's got a mainstream cinema release. Katie McCullough, who wrote London Pride, which was one of Blackshaw's Wandsworth Arts Festival shows in, I think, was it the first year that they did the Wandsworth Arts Festival, 2013?
Yes.
She wrote London Pride. She also works in film distribution and funding, and she ran a very successful crowdfunding campaign to finish the filming on Nina Forever. So there was a particular scene with a car crash in it that they needed more money for than they had, so they turned to Katie to get a crowdfunding campaign run. I funded that campaign, so I've been getting the regular project updates.
And single-handedly?
No.
Okay.
If I had that kind of money, Nick wouldn't need to do all
I
the
would
arts
be knocking on your door.
So I've been getting the updates, and it's now out. It's been around the festival circuit. It's been in select cinemas. They've done. Similar to the crowdfunding campaign, there's been a people-powered cinema campaign. There's a site where you can go and say, I suggest a screening of Nina Forever at Cinema X, Y, and Z. And if enough people sign up and pledge to pay to go to see that screening, then the cinema will say, yeah, fine, we'll put that screening on. So I went to a people-powered screening of Nina Forever at the Hackney Picture House. So, the film itself...
Backstory done. Good.
Yes,
tick.
That's all the meta stuff around the movie. Now the movie itself. So it's about Holly, played by Abigail Hardingham, who's a relative newcomer on the scene. She's a trainee paramedic who works in a supermarket to pay off her student bills. And at the supermarket, she meets Rob. Now Rob's girlfriend Nina died in a car accident, and he subsequently attempted suicide himself in a fit of grief. Mm-hmm. And Holly finds that whole story behind him very romantic and very intense, and is very drawn to him as a result of it. And so she pursues him, and they begin a relationship. And it gets super complicated when they first become intimate, and the dead girlfriend Nina manifests in the bed in the state in which she died.
Grim.
Awkward.
Mm. Very grim, very awkward. And so it's this kind of genre mashup of it. There's a lot of sort of dark humor running under it, and it is a romance and almost a sex comedy in places, and also a horror and a ghost story. Mm-hmm. And the thing that it reminded me most of was It Follows, which we reviewed last year.
Okay. In what capacity?
In terms of the tone, and in terms of the fact that I think when we talked about It Follows, what we said was the horror genre has always had this sort of relationship with sexuality. Mm. And what It Follows did was bring that into the text rather than the subtext, and really address that head on. The fact that the horror genre tends to sort of punish people for having sex. Mm-hmm. And so that sort of psychosexual side of Nina Forever really reminded me of that. Although it's played a bit more, sort of, whereas It Follows was very, very tense, and Nina Forever is a bit more, plays up the surreality of it a bit more, the surrealism and the absurdity of it.
Okay. So does she only manifest herself when they're in the bedroom?
Yeah, not necessarily only in the bedroom, but only in bedroom situations.
Okay, right, sure.
You're just trying to make me talk around the subject on live radio, aren't you?
A little bit. Keep going. Sorry.
Whereas It Follows was about kind of the sexual violence and the stigma of it, Nina Forever is a lot more about kind of the baggage, the things that we, and also, so it's the things that we can't leave behind, and the things that sort of pop into our heads in our most intimate moments, but also the things that we find attractive in people but wouldn't like to admit that that's why we find them attractive. So that, you know, her initial motivation for pursuing him is quite sort of dark and twisted in a way. And it's also kind of a haunting exorcism. Like, in structurally, it's kind of a haunting movie in that they have to try to work out why it is that she's appearing in order to try to stop that happening.
Right.
One of the things I found quite interesting about it is that it's everything that's happening is sort of a result of things that have happened to Rob, played by Kian Barry. But the story's not really about him. It's a lot more about the two women, the live one and the dead one. Mm-hmm. So it's not about his, you know, manly pain. It's about he's just the rope in there in what becomes a tug of war between the other two. So Fiona O'Shaughnessy plays the dead Nina. I know her from Utopia, which was a Channel 4 series, which has another theatre connection. That was written and produced, I think, by Dennis Kelly, who's mostly known as a playwright. Mm-hmm. She did a fantastic turn in that as Jessica Hyde, who's this kind of slightly sociopathic character. And so that was when I heard that she was involved and she was in it and playing this character, that was what kind of got me interested in the first place. But the real revelation is Abigail Hardingham as Holly, who I think she won a British Independent Film Award last year for most promising newcomer.
Oh, wow.
Pretty deservingly, I think. She reminded me in some points of this of Ruth Wilson, especially Ruth Wilson in Luther, playing opposite Idris Elba.
Oh, yeah.
Just something in the facial expression that is at once kind of slightly disturbing and sort of sensual, and there's a lot going on
there
that you can see. So, you know, highly recommended, and you can see it at the same time as doing these people-powered screenings. The film also released simultaneously on DVD and on lots of on-demand services, so you can watch this on sort of Amazon, the PlayStation Network, or you can buy the DVD as well. So.
No, I think I want to see this one. Do you think is it a film that sort of maybe deserves a bigger release, Well, I guess it's an independent film, so it is.
They've done pretty well already. I think Studio Canal distributed it.
Yeah.
And so I think I remember this from the crowdfunding campaign updates saying this is a massive deal for us that you know, we've gone from this independent, partly crowdfunded movie to a proper distribution deal with a proper movie distributor like Studio Canal.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about crowdfunding?
Have we done that? Yeah, we did. I think we've done two now, but we did one for Gormenghast the first time.
Oh, really?
But it's a lot of work. I think that's probably...
Yeah.
You really have to think everything through meticulously and you've got to have a kind of a reward system that kind of works for your audience.
It's got to be sort of constantly monitored and boosted throughout the time as well. You know, I mean, just the fact that this is Katie McCullough's pretty much full-time job.
Yeah.
You can't get a full-time job in doing these crowdfunding campaigns for arts projects.
Yeah, I think that's a sign of exactly how much effort they are. So for Blackshaw to run it, you know, with our main jobs and then in our spare time, I mean, you really need...
Yeah,
it's
you need
a lot of social media work you have to do. For
yeah, well, keep writing those applications then.
Oh, okay.
Matt, there's a lot of, staying on the movie subject, there's a lot of horror films coming out at the moment. Have you noticed that?
I hadn't particularly, no. Which ones are you talking
the
about?
The Forest, I think, is one.
It's with Natalie Dormer.
I really want to see that. But I feel like when we saw It Follows last year, it was around the same time. Do you reckon there's a correlation?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I was trying to figure it out in my head. I was like, okay, so Oscars is happening. We're coming to the end of, like, awards season, and now it's like, get the trash out?
Maybe
push the trash out at the cinemas.
Bit harsh, maybe.
Well, not, you know, like, a horror film's never going to win an Oscar, is it? Let's be real here, guys. It's just funny that I think that they're all coming out, you know, after Oscars.
I mean,
I don't know if there's a...
Movie releases do tend to go in cycles, and you know, you hear sort of blockbuster season is the summer months when all the school kids are off school.
Yeah.
And we seem to now have this sort of mini blockbuster season around sort of end of April, May, when the first sort of rash of superhero movies of the year usually come out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Horror is not a genre that I'm very, very deeply embedded in myself. So maybe February, March, sort of those dark winter months when everyone's a bit depressed, maybe those are the prime horror release dates.
I'm going to do some research and see if I can figure out some kind of pattern here, because I really want to see The Forest. That's something that I'm interested in seeing. Also, I was talking to Matt just before we came on air about how very excited I am about London Has Fallen. Everyone else in the studio is currently shaking their head, but what I hate in the realms of space, I make up for in my complete love for action and basically destructo films. So
these sort of destructo tourism films, where the point is how many like national recognizable landmarks can we blow up in one movie?
Like, I mean, I saw San Andreas and I was like, well, you know, this is fine, but I don't know what that building is, do I? But then I watched the trailer for London Has Fallen. I'm like, oh, it's so relevant to my life, in a way. That I know what the buildings are, you know, looking like.
You're living in the city that's getting blown up.
Yeah, there's an element of excitement.
I can see my house from this helicopter shot.
I don't know. I'm excited. I'm feeling like I've not read the room very well on that. Nick, are you excited to see anything in the cinema?
Oh.
I've put you on the spot massively.
Yeah, cinema. What's in the cinema?
Do you know what a cinema is,
No,
Matt?
It's been
Nick?
Such a long time.
I still
haven't seen Star Wars yet. I think I might have missed that boat.
No, it's still in cinemas.
Is it? Yeah. I should go and see it, because I've heard it's quite good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's still in the box office top 10.
Is it?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, there's still time.
Okay, yeah, you go see that.
I should catch up. Really.
I really want to see Spotlight. I haven't seen Spotlight yet, and I really, really want to see that, because that looks awesome.
Out of the Oscar bait, that one does look like the most interesting.
And apparently The Road is particularly good. The Room.
It's called Room.
Room.
Not The Room. The Room is the worst movie ever made.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That's where I'm getting confused.
Actually, that reminds me, we should review that. We should all sit down in a room and watch that horrible film in The Room.
Yeah, yeah.
And then review it on the show. Okay, we need to stop talking about film now. Matt, quickly, what?
I don't know
You
yet.
Don't know. I'm okay. Afraid. I always ask
Watch
you.
Twitter or tweet me and tell me what I should review in a fortnight's time.
Yes, tweet us at Blackshot Update if you have an idea for what Matt should review in 2 weeks' time. We are going to move swiftly on into our arts thing of the week now. And this is Vicky talking about 2016 and all the things that you shouldn't miss.
For my first arts thing of the year in 2016, and I know it's quite a lot later than you might expect, I thought I'd do a quick rundown of 5 arts picks that I have that I don't think you should miss that are coming this year. Number 1 is an exhibition of photography entitled Vogue 100, A Century of Style. This is a celebration of Vogue centenary at the National Portrait Gallery, where 280 stunning prints covering 100 years of fashion and celebrity will be displayed between the 11th of February and the 22nd of May. If you're a photography fan, a Vogue reader, or just a fan of fashion, I definitely suggest you get yourself along to this. Pick number 2 is Jamie Lloyd's production of The Maids at Trafalgar Studios. This hopefully shocking revival of Genet's controversial French original stars Laura Carmichael, Lady Edith from Downton Abbey, as Madame, and Uzo Aduba, who you'll know as Crazy Eyes from Orange is the New Black, and Zoe Ashton, who is the magnificent Vod in Fresh Meat, amongst other triumphs, who are both playing the maids. Several members of our team are already booked in to see this show in April. It's on until the 21st of May, and it's already started its run. So you can look forward to a lengthy arts discussion about this show later in the year. Now, the next one is a celebration of 400 years since Shakespeare's death. Yes, okay, it's not cheery, but it's definitely worth celebrating. And what better way to celebrate than a trip to the Globe to see one of the Bard's best-loved plays, A Midsummer Night's Dream, which is also artistic director Emma Rice's directorial debut at the Globe. It opens on the 30th of April and runs until the 11th of September, and will just be the perfect production to go and see on a warm summer's evening, if we're lucky enough to get any. As always, groundling tickets, which are standing tickets in the yard, are a steal at just £5, but make sure you wear your comfy shoes. Number 4, we're back to art again. If you love gardens, or like many Londoners don't have one and like to wistfully look at other people's, the Royal Academy exhibition on until April the 20th might be the one for you. Entitled Painting the Modern Garden, Monet to Matisse, you can expect lots of paintings from the modernist great and lots of really pretty looking gardens too. My last pick is something that you might not actually see in 2016. You'll probably see it in 2017 or maybe even 2018, but I can't mention arts things in 2016 without mentioning Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which is coming to theatres later this year. It opens at the start of summer, but there are still seats available from around the 21st of September and running all the way through till the end of the year and into 2017. But you might have more luck getting tickets later in the run.
Wow. So many things to go
all
and see. That was a really nice selection of like photography exhibitions and theatre bits and pieces. Is anyone seeing any of the stuff that Vicky just mentioned?
I had no plans to, but I'm excited about some of them. I actually know somebody who's got tickets for Harry Potter and the Cursed Child in October this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Hang on. So when is it starting? Next summer?
I don't know exactly. No. This year.
Starting this year.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
But I think when Vicky said you might not see it this year, I think she's just referring to how quickly the tickets are going.
Oh.
Will this be something that's going to run for ages, though, do you think?
I think it'll run as long as people keep buying tickets for it.
Yeah. Okay, so that's forever.
At the moment, yeah, only in London.
So it hasn't got its American debut.
It'll go to Broadway eventually.
Yeah, it'll get there. Just like Nick's going to go to Broadway.
Yes.
You were telling me before. So Nick's arts thing of this year is... Not even in London.
No,
which is,
sadly not.
No. What are you doing?
I'm going to New York next week. Oh, that sounds so good. I don't often
loser.
And yeah, Book of Mormon.
Do you know that that's playing in London?
Is it? Such an expensive way to
Yeah, it's an expensive trip you're doing.
Yeah.
Just fancied a trip.
Thought I might.
Okay.
Yeah,
see it on its home turf.
Exactly.
You should see it here when you get back and tell us what the differences between Broadway and West End productions are.
Yes, although I think it's a lot cheaper in Broadway. I think it's like $25 a ticket or something.
Really?
Whereas here, it's, you know, remortgage your house.
You don't have a house, Nick.
I don't. I have to remortgage other people. It's a problem.
Is that a way that Blackshaw could raise money?
There are lots of other ways we can raise money, but we can't discuss them on the radio.
We don't want to give away too much, Matt.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, Alex, are you seeing anything? Have you booked anything in?
I haven't planned to see anything, but I was interested by the photography, the Vogue photography one, purely on the basis that I went to see the Alexander McQueen exhibition last year twice, yes. Randomly enough.
So keen. I don't even think you knew who
he was. I wasn't even
planning
to go and see it. I wasn't even planning to see it and then saw it twice. So that I wonder if they're trying to, off the back of that,
yeah, kind that of, huge success that was. That was crazy successful.
They were opening, they were pretty much 24 hours a day at one point.
Yeah,
just to get everyone
towards
in.
Towards the end.
Yeah, in the last weekend, I think they were open for 48 hours straight. Just to get everyone in because people were clamouring for it. So I think that would be and purely photography is quite an interesting thing to see.
Yeah. No, I saw the McQueen last year as well, and it was mind-blowing. I went in, and I went with my friend who was in London from Australia. And she wanted to see it on the basis that she loved McQueen. And I was like, yeah, I'll come. Like, you know, sounds fine. Like, clothes, I guess. Woo. But it was amazing. Like, yeah. It really changed how I sort of feel about art and clothing. It sounds a bit wanky, but it was an absolutely fantastic exhibition. Just the way some of the stuff was presented, I think, was something that I've just never seen before in my life. Like, floor to ceiling, wall to wall, bits of, you know, like necklaces and it sounds really boring when you talk about it.
Yeah,
you got to see this kind of stuff. It's
it was V&A, right?
Yeah, it was
V&A. Music. I mean, not only do they put on good exhibitions, but they really know how to display the stuff. And I think that's kind of an underestimated skill in sort of where do you put it, what goes high up, what goes low down.
It's a crazy, like, you know, that's someone's job. Like, that's just what they do. They, you know, they put on those exhibitions. That takes some sort of creative foresight that I just don't possess. Like, to be able to walk in, like, see a collection and go, all right, that needs to go there. Like, you know, that's a skill.
It's like,
well done,
you know, it's
John
as
Bini.
Much of a, it's just like directing a play, really, but it's
static.
Yeah.
Exactly. Speaking of plays and directing plays, Ellie's going to be doing Seeing Black Shuck, which you're in, Alex.
Yes, this is true. This is true in May. I believe the dates are sporadic, but they're from the 11th to the 19th.
Yes.
Looking forward to getting started on that.
Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Without giving too much away, it's set in Norfolk, and it revolves around two inept drug smugglers doing their first really big job. And I play one of the inept smugglers. So it's... Yeah, I think that's all I can say, really, without giving too much away.
You did well. Well done.
And, of course, it does weave in the myth of Black Shuck.
Can you explain that to me?
It's one of a number of myths around the country that associate with a large beast, be it a dog, be it a large cat. So you've got, like, the Beast of Bodmin Moor, the Hound of the Baskervilles... Black Shuck.
Is this for real?
Yeah.
Are these real
yeah.
things that you're... Okay,
yeah,
fine.
These are myths that are either created as stories, as scary stories, and then kind of perpetuate into real life, or they're things that people may or may not have seen.
Right.
Like the guy who saw a lion, but it was actually just a large ginger cat.
Yeah, okay, so that's what it is. It's when, like, you look out and you're like, oh, it's just a big cat, Bob. Like, it's just like...
Yeah.
It's like a house cat.
Yeah.
It's not lion, mate. Come on.
What an incredibly Australian response to seeing a large creature. It's not a... It's
well,
not a
no,
lion,
there is a lot of people in Australia. You know the Tasmanian tiger? Mm-hmm. Do you know that animal? It's been extinct for hundreds of years now. There is a lot of people in Australia who think that still exists. There's people who dedicate their life to going out into the bush to find this Tasmanian tiger. And it's like, guys, it's dead. It's been dead for ages. It's a dog that you're seeing with stripes that kind of looks the same. Anyway, that was a tangent. I apologize.
But there's no myth around the Tasmanian tiger that if you see one, you will die.
No.
Which there is around Black Shuck.
Is it?
Or it's supposed to be a general ill omen.
They're not good things to see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Steer clear, I think, is the guidance.
Okay, so we've got drug smugglers, dogs. We've got dog myth on the Norfolk coast. And so it's an hour long, isn't it?
It's an hour long, nice and short.
Yeah,
it's going to be on at the Bedford in Balham.
Yeah, written by Duncan Hands. Yes, and Helen, I think, is going to be talking to Duncan before the play begins in May. It's part of the Wandsworth Arts Festival as well, so we're going to be hashtagging WAF Chat as we talk about seeing Black Shuck all the way up until May. So yeah, and you guys did something fun last weekend, surrounding this
cold,
play.
Cold and fun.
Cold and fun.
Yeah, it's Blackshaw's favourite thing to do.
Yeah, Nick was in his favourite place last Saturday.
Yes, Whitstable.
Yes.
Whitstable in Kent.
We went down and you guys did a photo shoot.
We did. Promo shots for Black Shuck, which was a delight.
Yes.
So they're up on, I think we've chosen some of them. I think they're on are they circulating on social media yet?
Oh, I believe so. I've certainly posted it.
Yeah, Alex went there.
Yeah, I think it's Alex's profile picture. He's really happy with it.
And I'm retweeting the link to the pics from the @WandsworthRadio Twitter account as we speak.
That's clever. Look at that go.
Yeah. So yeah, we've started promotion for Seeing Black Shuck. It's going to be on at the Bedford in May as a part of the Wandsworth Arts Festival. And Alex will probably be talking about it more on the show as we lead up to that. But now we're going to listen to episode 5. We are up to episode 5
of
Great Expectations. It is going fantastically. And I think you might hear Alex's voice in this one as well.
So if you can recognise him. Tweet us if you can work out which character he's playing.
Yes, tweet us the character that Alex Pankhurst is playing in episode 5 of Great Expectations.
Great Expectations, Episode 5.
I went down early in the morning. We went into the churchyard, close to the graves of my unknown parents. And there, my sister was laid quietly in the earth, while the larks sang high above it, and the light wind strewed it with beautiful shadows of clouds and trees. When the shadows of evening were closing in, I took an opportunity of getting into the garden with Biddy for a little talk.
I suppose it will be difficult for you to remain here now, Biddy dear?
Oh, I can't do so, Mr. Pip.
I shall be often down here now. I am not going to leave poor Joe alone. Biddy, don't you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Pip.
Biddy, I made a remark respecting my coming down here often to see Joe, which you received with a marked silence. Have the goodness, Biddy, to tell me why.
Are you quite sure, then, that you will come to see him often?
Time went on, whether or no, as he has a way of doing, and I came of age. I repaired to Mr. Jagger's office. A model of punctuality.
Well, Pip, I must call you Mr. Pip today. Congratulations, Mr. Pip.
Thank you, sir.
Now, my young friend, I'm going to have a word or two with you.
If you please, sir.
What do you suppose you are living at the rate of?
At the rate of, sir?
At the rate of.
Reluctantly, I confessed myself quite unable to answer the question.
I thought so. Now, I have asked you a question, my friend. Have you anything to ask me?
Is my benefactor to be made known to me today?
No, ask another.
Is that confidence to be imparted to me soon?
Waive that a moment and ask another.
Have I anything to receive, sir?
Aha! I thought we should come to it. Now, Mr. Pip, take this piece of paper, now unfold it, and tell me what it is.
This is a banknote for £500.
That is a banknote for £500, and that handsome sum of money, Pip, is your own, and at the rate of that handsome sum of money per annum, you are to live until the donor of the whole appears.
There was a question just now, Mr. Jaggers, which you desired me to wait for a moment. I hope I'm doing nothing wrong in asking it again.
What is it?
Is it likely that my patron will soon...
Will soon what? That's no question as it stands, you know.
Will soon come to London, or summon me anywhere else.
Come, I'll be playing with you, my friend Pip. That's a question I must not be asked. When that person discloses, you and that person will settle your own affairs. When that person discloses, it will not be necessary for me to know anything about it. And that's all I have got to say.
When the £500 had come into my pocket, a thought had come into my head, which had been often there before. And it appeared to me that Wemmick was a good person to advise with concerning such thought.
Mr. Wemmick, I am very desirous to serve a friend. This friend is trying to get on in commercial life, but finds it difficult to make a beginning. Now, I want, somehow, to help him to a beginning.
Mr. Pip, I should just like to run over with you on my fingers, if you please, the names of the various bridges up as high as Chelsea Reach. Let's see. There's London, 1, Southwark, 2, Blackfriars, 3, Waterloo, 4, Westminster, 5, Vauxhall, 6. There's as many as 6, you see, to choose from.
I don't understand you.
Choose your bridge, Mr. Pip, and take a walk upon your bridge, and pitch your money into the Thames over the centre arch of your bridge, and you know the end of it. Serve a friend with it. And you may know the end of it too, but it's a less pleasant and profitable end.
Then is it your opinion that a man should never...
Invest portable property in a friend? Certainly he should not. Unless he wants to get rid of the friend, and then it becomes a question of how much portable property it may be worth to get rid of him.
And that is your deliberate opinion, Mr. Wemmick?
That is my deliberate opinion in this office.
Ah, but would that be your opinion at Woolworth?
Mr. Pip... Woolworth is one place, and this office is another. My Woolworth sentiments must be taken at Woolworth. None but my official sentiments can be taken in this office.
I devoted the next ensuing Sunday afternoon to taking Mr. Wemmick's Woolworth sentiments, and before a week was out, we found a worthy young merchant who wanted intelligent help. Secret articles were signed, of which Herbert was the subject. And I paid him half of my £500 down.
Well, you know, Mr. Pip, I must tell you one thing. This is devilish good of you.
I shall never forget the radiant face with which Herbert came home one afternoon and told me of his having fallen in with one Clarica, the young merchant's name. I did really cry in good earnest when I went to bed to think that my expectations had done some good to somebody. The turning point of my life now opens on my view, but before I proceed, I must give one chapter to Estella. It is not much to give to the theme that so long filled my heart.
Pip, Pip, will you never take warning?
Of what?
Of me.
Warning not to be attracted by you, do you mean, Estella?
Do I mean? If you don't know what I mean, you are blind.
I should have replied that love was commonly reputed blind.
The time has come round when Miss Havisham wishes to have me for a day at Satis. You are to take me there and bring me back, if you will. Can you take me?
We went down on the next day but one. We were seated by the fire, and Miss Havisham had Estella's arm drawn through her own, when Estella gradually began to detach herself, moving to the great chimney-piece, where she stood looking down at the fire.
What? Are you tired of me?
Only a little tired of myself.
Speak the truth, you ingrate! You are tired of me!
Estella looked at her with perfect composure and again looked down at the fire.
Oh, look at her! Look at her! So hard and thankless. On the hearth where she was reared, where I took her into this wretched breast when it was first bleeding from its stab.
But what would you have?
Love!
You have it!
I have not.
Mother by adoption. I owe everything to you. All I possess is freely yours. All that you have given me is at your command to have again. Beyond that, I have nothing. And if you ask me to give you what you never gave me, my gratitude and duty cannot do impossibilities.
Did I never give her love? Did I never give her burning love? Let her call me mad. Let her call me mad.
Why should I call you mad, I of all people?
Does anyone live who knows what set purposes you have half as well as I do? When have you found me false to your teaching? When have you found me unmindful of your lessons? When have you found me giving admission here?
She touched her bosom with her hand.
To anything that you excluded. Be just to me.
So proud, so proud.
Who taught me to be proud? Who praised me when I learnt my lessons?
So hard, so hard.
Who taught me to be hard? Who praised me when I learnt my lesson?
But to be proud and hard to me. Estella. Estella. Estella, to be proud and hard to me.
I begin to think that I almost understand how this comes about. If you had taught your adopted daughter from the dawn of her intelligence that there was such a thing as daylight, but that it was made to be her enemy and destroyer, and she must always turn against it, if you had done this and then for a purpose had wanted her to take naturally to the daylight and she could not do it, you would have been disappointed and angry. So I must be taken as I have been made. The success is not mine, the failure is not mine, but the two together make me.
It is impossible to turn this leaf of my life without putting Bentley Drummle's name upon it, or I would, very gladly. Heavy in figure, movement, and comprehension, he was idle, proud, reserved, and suspicious. He came of rich people down in Somersetshire, who had nursed this combination of qualities until they made the discovery that it was just of age and a blockhead. At a certain assembly ball at Richmond, this blundering Drummle so hung about her, and with so much toleration on her part, that I resolved to speak to her concerning him.
Are you tired, Estella?
Rather, Pip.
You should be.
Say, rather, I should not be, for I have my letter to Satis House to write before I go to sleep.
Recounting tonight's triumph, surely a very poor one, Estella.
What do you mean? I didn't know there had been any.
Estella, do look at that fellow in the corner yonder that is looking over here at us.
Why should I look at him? What is there in that fellow in the corner yonder that I need to look at?
Indeed, that is the very question I want to ask you, for he has been hovering about you all night.
Moths and all sorts of ugly creatures hover about a lighted candle. Can the candle help it?
No, but cannot the Estella help it?
Well, perhaps. Yes, anything you like.
But, Estella, do you hear me speak? It makes me wretched that you should encourage a man so generally despised as Drummle. You know that he is despised.
Pip, don't be foolish about its effect on you. It may have its effect on others, and it may be meant to have. It's not worth discussing.
Yes, it is, because I have seen you give him looks and smiles this very night, such that you never give to me.
Do you want me, then, to deceive and entrap you?
Do you deceive and entrap him, Estella?
Yes, and many others. All of them but you.
I was now 23 years of age. We had left Barnard's Inn more than a year and lived in the Temple. Business had taken Herbert on a journey to Marseille. I was alone, dispirited and anxious. We lived at the top of the last house, and the wind rushing up the river shook the house that night like discharges of cannon. When the rain came with it and dashed against the windows, I thought, raising my eyes to them as they rocked, that I might have fancied myself in a storm-beaten lighthouse. I was listening at the window and thinking how the wind assailed and tore it when I heard a footstep on the stair. I took up my reading lamp and went out to the stairhead.
There is someone down there, is there not?
Yes.
What floor do you want?
The top. Mr. Pip.
That is my name. There is nothing the matter?
Nothing the matter.
I made out that he had long, iron-grey hair. His age was about 60.
Pray, what is your business?
Oh, my business, yes. Yes, I will explain my business, by your leave.
Do you wish to come in?
Yes, I wish to come in, master.
What do you want?
It's disappointing to a man after having looked forward so distant and come so far, but you're not to blame for that. Give me half a minute, please.
I looked at him attentively, but I did not know him.
There's no one nigh, is there?
Why do you, a stranger, coming into my rooms at this time of night, ask that question?
You're a game one. I'm glad you growed up a game one, but don't catch hold of me. You'd be sorry afterwards to have done it.
I relinquished the intention he had detected, for I knew him. I could not have known my convict more distinctly than I knew him now.
You acted noble, my boy, noble Pip, and I've never forgot it.
Stay! Keep off! If you are grateful to me for what I did when I was a little child, I hope you have shown your gratitude by mending your way of life. But I have done well since then, and you must understand, I cannot wish to renew that chance intercourse of long ago under these different circumstances. Still, however, you have found me out, and there must be something good in the feeling. You are wet and you look weary. Will you drink something before you go?
May I be so bold as to ask you how you have done so well?
How? I have been chosen to succeed to some property.
Might a mere varmint ask it, whose property?
I don't know.
Could I make a guess, I wonder, at your income since you came of age? As to the first figure now. 5? Concerning a guardian, because there ought to have been some such guardian whilst you was a minor. Some lawyer, maybe. As to the first letter of that lawyer's name now, would it be J? Put it as the employer of that lawyer whose name begun with J and might be Jaggers. However you have found me out, you says just now. Well, however did I find you out? Well, I wrote from Portsmouth to a person in London for particulars of your address. That person's name? Oi, Wemmick.
I seemed to be suffocating. The room began to surge and turn. He caught me, drew me to the sofa, and put me up against the cushions.
Yes, Pip, dear boy, I've made a gentleman on you. It's me what has done it. I swore at that time, sure as ever I earned a guinea, that guinea should go to you. I lived rough so that you should live smooth. I worked hard so that you should be above work. Look here, Pip. I'm your second father. You're my son. Don't you mind talking, Pip. You ain't looked slowly forward to this as I have. You wasn't prepared for this as I was. But didn't you never think it might be me?
Oh, no, never.
Well, you see, it was me. And single-handed. Never a soul in it but my own self. Oh, and Mr. Jaggers.
Was there no one else?
No. Who else should there be? Where will you put me? I must be put somewhere, dear boy.
My friend and companion is absent. You must have his room.
He won't come back tomorrow, will he?
No, not tomorrow.
Because, looky here, dear boy. Caution is necessary.
How do you mean, caution?
Oh, by God, it's death.
What's death?
I was sent for life. It's death to come back. I should certainly be hanged if took.
Miss Havisham's intentions towards me, all a mere dream. Estella not designed for me. I only suffered in Satis House as a convenience. But sharpest and deepest pain of all, it was for the convict, guilty of I knew not what crimes, that I had deserted Joe. And I could never, never, never undo what I had done.
You've been listening to Great Expectations by Charles Dickens, adapted by Marcus Baisley, produced as a collaboration between Blackshaw Theatre and Cyphers. The narrator was played by Jeremy Drakes, Magwitch and Pumblechook by Dylan Lincoln, Compeyson, Porter and Galley by Marcus J. Baisley, Estella and Mrs. Joe by Victoria Hamblin, Pip by Rupert Sadler, Joe, Wemmick and Drummle by Christopher Anderton, Sergeant and Jaggers by Alexander Pankhurst, Miss Havisham by Jessica Bryan, Herbert Pocket by William Holyhead, and Biddy by Rosie Marsh. Sound recording and design by Andrew Crane. Produced by Helen Johnson and Aisha Chapman.
You have just been listening to episode 5 of Great Expectations. In a fortnight's time on the next show, we will be bringing you episode 6. And then it's just one more after that one. Yeah, on the final episode, on the show that we play that final episode, I think we're going to have Andy Crane in, who was the sound recordist who sort of made that all happen and has been studiously editing as we've been playing. He's going to come in and talk to us about the trials and tribulations of doing that kind of event. Where Helen and I, as the producers, were just like, "Yeah, this is doable. This will be fine. It's going to be great." And Andy was just like, "Are you joking me? What have you made me do?
What have you signed me up for?"
Yeah. So Andy's going to come in and talk to us about how he made a ridiculous request a reality. So that'll be nice. So we've been talking a little bit because obviously I put Matt on the spot a bit before, which I always do, about what film he's going to review in a fortnight.
I should just know by now that it's going to happen. I should do my
I know,
research.
You're just not just, prepared.
I just never do.
Never learned.
No,
never
but learned. As usual, I've done it while Great Expectations was on. So,
yes.
You've already talked about London Has Fallen. That is an option. That's out this week. I might go and see that.
Please, listeners, support Aisha's venture to get Matt.
I'll do a Twitter poll, because you can do polls on Twitter.
Yeah.
What should I go and see? So there's that. There's also the one that I'm quite excited about is 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is the sort of sequel to Cloverfield, which was J.J. Abrams's found footage giant monster destroys New York movie.
Yeah, see, I'm still okay with this one because there is destruction involved, so I would be happy with that.
Yeah, John Goodman and Mary Elizabeth Winstead are in it, and they're usually both very good. So I'm quite excited about that one. Or if I'm feeling really lazy, the sequel to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon has just come out on Netflix only.
Oh.
It's just been released as a Netflix only debut premiere. So if I feel like just staying at home, I might just watch that.
What's that called?
It's called Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, : Sword of Destiny.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
it's a mouthful.
It's not Dragon :
No.
Because that would be something different, really.
No, you've got to dive a bit deeper into the Netflix recommendations to find that
Let's
one.
Let's not talk about diving deep in colons.
No.
Weird.
I'm sorry.
This has gone a bit strange. Okay, Netflix are doing a lot of that kind of stuff at the moment.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, Netflix-own things. Nick was actually talking to us before about how he watches television these days.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Do you want to explain to people how you watch Netflix?
Yeah, well, I spent ages just flicking through, scrolling through, and then going, yeah, I want to watch that and that. And then not, and then going to bed.
I do the thing where I sit down with my tea, and I'm flicking through, and by the time I've finished my dinner, I've still not found anything to watch. And then I'm like, I'm done with the telly now, because I wanted to watch stuff while I was eating. And
so next
terrible.
Time, next time, close your eyes, look away.
Okay.
Point your remote.
Yeah.
At the television.
Do you click? Do you click or scroll?
Scroll.
You vary the length of time.
Yeah, and you go up and down, change the genres.
Yeah.
And then just select. And then you have to watch it.
Is that the rule?
You have to watch whatever it is.
What is the worst thing you've watched employing this new rule of watching Netflix?
Well, I suppose one of them was Barbie's Princess World or something of that description.
Was this animation or?
Yeah, it was an animation. It was a weird, it was kind of, they were, I don't know if they were the actual Barbies. I don't know if it was
It wasn't stop motion.
Stop
Barbie.
Motion. I don't think so.
I don't think
it looks
that's
better,
a
but
thing.
But they couldn't bend their arms.
Did you stick to your process enough that you watched this all the way through?
Yeah, I did.
I'm very impressed by your levels of commitment to this.
What was the storyline like in Barbie's Princess Palace?
There wasn't one. It was misogyny, I think, was the main thing.
Tasty misogyny.
But I didn't know if it was being sarcastic or not. I don't think it was.
I don't think it's that layered.
I might have been reading too much into it. I've watched a lot of Woody Allen because of this method.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't even know that was
Mighty
on Netflix.
Aphrodite.
Nope.
It's an interesting
one.
Okay.
It's a mix of
Odysseus
and a modern New York.
Fantastic.
Gentleman. Yeah.
That sounds like the kind of Woody Allen I don't want to ever watch.
It's so Woody Allen.
Yeah. I hate that man. Anyway. we're nearly at the end of the show for another week. Thank you to all of my lovely co-hosts and Nick for not being terrified and scared of your radio debut.
You've been very relaxed.
He's a very relaxed kind of guy, I think. Yeah. He has to be relaxed when he is, you know, struggling to find money.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he just... What were we talking about before that you were going to cry about? Oh, I was going to ask you about how... So Blackshaw is doing... We're putting on Gormenghast towards the end of this year. So I think we're scheduling for November.
Funding contingent.
Yeah, it's all depending on the funding, which, you know, Ellie, the director, keeps reminding me.
How does that feel?
She just pops in going, how are the applications going? are we going to do Gormenghast this year?
An entire show is resting on your shoulders, Nick. Yeah. Are you aware of that?
She has let me know that. She's very nice about it.
Oh, of course, yeah.
She's nice. But yeah, I'm feeling the pressure.
Okay.
a lot of us got together this week and had a read through of the current version of the script as well. So, you know, was that motivating for you to hear the play that you are attempting to make a reality?
Yes, it was, because I loved seeing everyone in the same room again. That was so nice.
Because we brought back a lot of the cast from the original production, which was Blackshaw's first ever production, Gormenghast at the Actors' Church.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And we had the entire cast apart from Steerpike, Fuchsia, and Lord Grown.
And Lord Grown, yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
But I think it's a good sign that, we had the full cast there.
Yeah.
They all wanted to come back.
Yeah.
Well, it means in terms of, you know, when you get the go-ahead for funding is all signed off and we secured it, then we can go with rehearsals and start the process.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
I'll do that then.
It's all up to you.
Cheers.
Thanks, Nick.
That's all right.
Thanks for your hard work, Nick.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at with Blackshaw. Yeah. We've given you quite a good overview, actually, of what's happening with us this year. So seeing Blackshaw is happening in May.
Yeah. Oh, and we were...
On that note, can we just say thank you to Robin Savage, the delightful photographer who came to Whitstable and braved the weather to take the rather dramatic and brilliant-looking promo shots for Black Shuck. So thank you to Robin. And, of course, thank you to Rachel Knott, who was taking part in that as well, as she will be taking part in the show.
So it's just the two of you on stage, isn't it?
Yeah, for an hour.
And you can't tell at home, but rather pleasingly, as Alex was talking about Inhospitable Whitstable, the TV in our studio was showing clips from The Revenant, Leonardo DiCaprio wading through the terrible snow and cold.
There were some big bears. No, there were some big dogs, but no bears. So
lots of dogs in Whitstable.
Yeah,
that's why I love it.
Black ones.
Yeah. Dog weed on Rachel's scarf. Yeah, and a dog did micturate onto Rachel's scarf, which was a highlight.
Was the highlight.
It was.
It?
Yeah. Wow. We're going to leave you on that note, that a dog weeing on someone's scarf was a highlight of a photo shoot. I might quickly add that the 11th of March, guys, it's nearly March, just putting that out there. The 11th of March is the final time that you can put your submissions for any new writing that you have, because we're having our new writing night showcase on the 30th of March at the Horse and Stables in Lambeth. Wow. Yeah, that's come around again.
Come around again.
I know. It's a whole year.
It's a whole year.
Yeah, it's March.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we do it.
Criven.
Yeah, so get your submissions in by the 11th. If you head over to blackshawonline.com, you can follow all the links to submitting your piece of writing. And then come and have a beer with us and watch some awesome new writing at The Horse.
And while you're
30th.
On blackshawonline.com, you can subscribe to this show as a podcast.
Yay, we're
so
a podcast.
So that you don't have to listen live if you don't want to, although we do very much appreciate it when you do.
Yes. Nick's friends are listening.
Yes.
Yay,
Matt,
thank you.
Ben and James.
Shout out on Wandsworth Radio.
Some Kentish people.
All right, this is descending into chaos now, because this has been a really fun show, guys. Thank you so much for coming in. And we will be with you again in a fortnight. Say bye, everyone.
Cheers,
bye, everyone.